Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. A beautiful, beautiful day for early November. And I look to my right, and lo and behold, who is it? My co-pilot, the trusted great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, bro?
Your mood seems up today, Fred. I'm excited. Your mood is you're back to normal, Fred, after a win. So
I am so pumped after that incredible win yesterday. And you want to know why, DT? You want to know why? The primary reason why is because of one of my favorite players in the NBA, a guy who I was screaming for the Bulls to draft while others were unnamed people from Australia were screaming for Mini Cooper. I was cheering for Io, and every time Io succeeds, I feel like I win. And Io, what a success last night. 6-7 from the field, basically replicated the role that Caruso provides for the beloved Bull. What say you,
DT? Yeah, Io was definitely the game's MVP against Detroit. No doubt. Had a great game. And, you know, really just has had a very solid season, to be honest, over this year so far. I think it's getting harder and harder to find ways to keep him off the court. And that's really a struggle for Donovan overall between Io, Carter, and Kobe. I mean, I think all three of those guys are actually playing pretty well. Some people, I think, would disagree about Kobe, but I think that's actually one of the challenges for the team this year is figuring out how to distribute minutes amongst those three guys, especially if there's a healthy Caruso on the team as well, you know, who's going to suck up a fair amount of minutes.
So true. And I think that's, you know, partly the poor roster constructions reflected there. I mean, all those guys essentially at their best play the same role. I do feel Io provides a little bit more versatility in that I do think he can guard, you know, kind of like a one through a three. Even in some cases, he's so wiry strong that he can maybe even take on a four in smaller lineups against smaller lineups. But I love his defense. And, you know, I just think he's taken a big step back. I thought he was kind of unfairly. He didn't shoot the ball well from three last year, and that was a massive drag on the offense overall. And it was a disappointing development since he shot the ball so well from three in his rookie season. But big picture, like, he took a lot of heat for not playing well. And I would concur, he did not play as well as his rookie year, but it wasn't terrible. Like, he did have good moments. He did have some good games last season, most notably that huge putback offensive rebound against, I think it was Atlanta, that won the game where the whole team jumped on him afterwards. And, you know, like, I always felt like what Io definitely brings, he brings an energy. And he's never lacking for that. Like, that's always a positive in his corner, that every game he seems ready to play, bringing high level of energy. And he's definitely shooting the ball better this year. So his progression, I think, is something that we should celebrate in this young season.
Yeah, no doubt about that. What would you do with this roster in terms of cutting minutes to make room for Io? And, you know, I don't know if you feel the same way. Like, I think Javon Carter has played really well this season. Also, you know, 14.8 minutes a game. Io is at 13.6. You know, Kobe's at 32.2. I think you could probably shave off about 4 minutes there. Obviously, if Caruso is out, you've got a lot more minutes to hand out if Caruso's playing. You know, I'd actually like to see Caruso's minutes go up. I know they have some weird minute restriction that's unofficial on him, which is just strange. Like, think of a time like a 29-year-old with no ongoing health problems had a minute restriction. Like, I can't think of anyone.
It's because of the way he plays, DT. I do understand it to a certain degree. He plays with such, you know, physicality for his size. He's not like a massive guy.
I don't think he plays with such so crazy physicality for his size. So I'm gonna throw this out for you. Would you put Ja Morant on a 23-minute-per-game restriction?
No, but I don't think he's sacrifices his body.
You don't think so? Like, John Morant's like, feet in the air getting knocked around and thrown to the ground.
On the offensive end.
But that's more dangerous than what Caruso's doing. Like, I'd rather just say, hey, Alex, don't try to take charges. Like, take out some of the most dangerous plays. Like, I would almost actually think you should just coach your team not to try to take charges, just try to play defense. Because charges are almost always like a 50-50 call anyway. You get like a blocking foul half the time you do it. And your guy just gets leveled every time either way. Like, it just seems like this is such a like a high-risk play, and it's like not a very high-reward play. Like, it's high-reward if you get the charge, but then half the time the call goes against you, and it's a low-reward play. So I just, like, I don't know. I don't know if there's, like, much upside there in, like, trying to coach guys to do that, to be honest. But, like, I feel if you could get Caruso on the court for 5 more minutes and said, like, all right, but, like, that one charge you draw, like, every other game, like, we lose that one play, like, I think that's okay.
I think that Io and Carter and Caruso are versatile enough and good enough to be all on the court at the same time. I kind of don't understand the reluctance there. It seems like for whatever reason, Caruso and Io and Carter have not played a lot together. I could be wrong on this. I don't have it. You know, it just seems in my head, in my unofficial back of the napkin recollections. But, like, when you look at Io right now, he's shooting 54% from the field, 46.7% from three. Alex Caruso, 59% from the field, 44% from three. And Carter shooting, what is he at? Javon Carter, 48% from the field, 50% from three. Those are three of your best three-point shooters so far to this point in the season. You got to get them on the court. Like, I'd prefer to see more of Patrick Williams' minutes sacrifice for and move maybe put a little bit more of Alex Caruso at the four. And I know there's probably a hesitancy there since he will be kind of banging against a bigger body, which would potentially yield injuries. I mean, he's out again, you know, like he does have a propensity to get hurt. There's no debate on that. So I do kind of understand the limitations or their efforts to limit his minutes, but like you got to figure out a way to get Io and Carter on court more. They're just performing so much better. And I think that should come at the expense of Patrick Williams. Because what's he doing out there? He's shooting 30% from the field, 22% from three. And his defense isn't that good. In fact, I think it's been pretty awful for the most part this year, with the exception of the Dallas game. His off-ball defense is terrible. He doesn't rebound, which I consider to be a part of defense. Like, get him off the court. Like, why does he have to play? Just because he's the fourth overall pick? He doesn't deserve to play. What say you?
Yeah, I would also agree. I don't think, like, Pat Williams, I would be fine sacrificing Pat's minutes. But the thing is, you just say, well, we have to limit Alex's minutes because we don't want him to get hurt. And then you're going to put him in a position where he's way more likely to be hurt. You know, I'm going to tell you what I would do.
Good point.
Generally is, and we probably won't do this, but one, I would consider moving DeMar DeRozan to the bench and playing him in like a Manu Ginobili type role where like he closes games. But don't start him. But two, like trade one of Zach or DeMar. And then you'll have a lot more opportunity for these other guys. And I know kind of like that idiocy of like, well, we got to trade DeMar so Pat can flourish. But you already know like DeMar, Zach, and Vucevic do not play well together. We have like 2+ years of data that shows these guys do not mesh well together at all. And of those guys, you know, it's weird because DeMar is by far your best player. And he's also the guy that it's like the hardest.
By far?
Yeah. So this year. This year.
Yeah, okay. Like, I'll buy that.
I mean, I think like, you know, Zach just keeps having this year, especially like the moments at the end of games where he just flubs stuff up constantly. You know, but I just wonder like if you traded either DeMar or Zach, like, so say you did that. So you traded, let's just say we'd hurt Zach because we can't get anything for DeMar, right? And just say they're just not high in Zach in the future. It would kind of make sense because, you know, Zach wasn't their guy and these guys never trade someone that's their guy. So it kind of fits what Acme might do anyway. But let's just say you trade Zach and you get, you know, a handful of like future first round picks that are probably not super high upside, which in like maybe a role player or two, which is probably about what would happen. If you do that, then I think it would be interesting. You slide Kobe White into the shooting guard position, and then, you know, Javon Carter becomes your starting point guard, and Alex Caruso and Io Dosunmu become your bench guards, but they're only playing guard positions. And say, like, one of the guys you get back from Zach is, like, a role-playing power forward somehow, you know, and then that guy kind of, like, fits in to take some more of those big man minutes. You might actually improve the team this year, giving, like, these guys. And then you might set yourself up more for the future if you're going to like tear down.
All right. So let's go into this since it's probably an apropos time. And I had kind of an online debate on this yesterday. So yesterday we lose that game that DeMar DeRozan doesn't play. He was fantastic. 29 points, 11 and 19 from the field, 5 of 5 from the free throw line. And this is, to me, like one of his greatest values is that he gets to the line. He's 11th in the league in free throw attempts, and he shoots it at like an 83% rate or 84, 85, 86. But I don't know exactly.
Whatever. Yeah, he's a good career.
Very good rate. Good free throw shooter who puts pressure on. And there's value in, you know, getting the defense to foul and getting to the line, and there's tremendous value in that. Zach LaVine is your second best. Currently, I think this year, let me look it up, 6.7 for DeMar. Zach's at 5.8, which was top 25 in the league last time I looked. They don't have another player who's in like the top 100. Might not even be 150. The third guy on the team currently is Coby White at 1.9 free throw attempts per game. So, like, I'm all aboard and with this idea of trading either player, DeMar or Zach. I do think if you trade DeMar, I think that we might be surprised at the level it affects the team, at least initially, until you kind of figure out where to get some half-court offense. But I will say, I think DeMar DeRozan right now has probably a higher trade value than Zach LaVine. So this was the debate. Who has a higher trade value, Zach or DeMar? And to me, you look at the Lakers, and the Lakers are in a serious trouble right now, or you know, relative to where in terms of how they feel about the team with LeBron and his career coming to an end. I think they were 4-5. I'm not sure if they won yesterday. Austin Reeves has been moved to the bench, which is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard, for Cam Reddish. Like, I think there's an opportunity for you to make a deal with the Los Angeles Lakers. And I had brought it up on Twitter. Would you trade DeMar DeRozan to the Lakers for Austin Reeves and cap filler and an unprotected number one? 25% of the fan base said no. What would you do? Would you agree? First of all, do you agree with my statement that DeMar has probably higher trade value than Zach right now just because Zach has not played well? And then two, would you make that trade with the Lakers?
I don't know that DeMar has higher trade value. I think it's just an eye of the beholder thing. You know, a team that looks like Zach is okay. Someone who could fit in with them for a long time. You know, Zach's skill set can likely fit in to the Lakers a lot better than DeMar's can, right? Like, they're just going to give DeMar the ball and let him cook on the Lakers? Like,
well, not financially. Not financially. That's
well,
the
well
point.
Just hear me out.
Like, DeMar's on an expiring
you're gonna
deal
have to match
with
salaries.
Much less money.
You're going to have to match salaries anyway.
Well, Austin Reeves doesn't make that much money. That's
but you're
going
to have to send enough filler. So it's like probably like, say, Rui Hachimura and Austin Reeves for like Zach LaVine. And then maybe like one other player to balance it out. And that's going to be relatively, that's going to basically then be the same cost over the same number of years when you do that. So it'd be financially neutral for both teams.
So you're telling me you think from the Lakers' perspective, and keep in mind, that would be LeBron James because he's the de facto GM and he has a huge voice in that room. Do you think he would be more inclined to bringing in Zach LaVine or DeMar DeRozan?
I don't know. I'm not in LeBron's head. You know, it's impossible to know. But I mean, I agree with you that that's probably the most critical thing. But if you think of what the Lakers need, they need someone who can shoot. They need like a guy who can put up a lot of attempts and high efficiency. And Zach LaVine has shown he's that guy in this league. You know, I think Zach LaVine on a Lakers team with LeBron and someone else could be a guy who's finally morphs into the Klay Thompson role. You know, like next to LeBron and AD, he's going to get a whole lot of just like lousy guys on him and open looks and like whatever with some movement. So, you know, I could see that going either way. Like, I don't know how LeBron, or I don't know how DeMar DeRozan fits offensively next to AD and LeBron, whom neither one of those guys you really want out at the 3-point line. I know LeBron in his older age is, you know, maybe more willing to just sit out there and take easy shots sometimes to conserve energy, but it's not good shots when he takes those. And I just don't know what you do with DeMar, like on that team. Like, what problem does he solve for you? The Lakers don't need a guy who draws
gets
fouls.
Gets to the line, scores.
Yeah, they don't need a guy who's going to, like, just pound the shit out of the ball and takes up all the clock to get his points and scores in the mid-range where you want your two other star players to operate. Like, that just doesn't fit in with anything they need offensively. And then he doesn't defend. So
scores in the half court?
Yeah, they don't need that. They don't need that. Fred, they don't need that. They need a shooter. They need a high-volume superstar shooter on that team. Like, I don't think they need what DeMar brings. Like, look, and I'm just saying, this is just my feeling. LeBron might feel totally differently. He might be buddy-buddy with DeMar from whatever, forever, and want him. Like, I don't know. I'm just telling you, I don't see how DeMar fits on that team at all. But I agree. It really doesn't matter what I think. It matters what LeBron thinks.
From a Bulls perspective, would you do that trade that I suggested for DeMar?
What was
Reeves,
the exact trade again?
Filler? Reeves and an unprotected number one, which I'm not sure the Lakers would agree to, but let's assume they do, for DeMar DeRozan and cap filler, whatever that is.
Of course.
You know,
it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. I'm shocked how many people were like, that's terrible trade. Reeves is overrated. I'm just like, it's the unprotected one is the thing I'm focusing on. And Reeves is a fine player to bring into the organization. You know, even if Zach went, you better have Austin Reeves in this deal. Somebody's suggested trades for, you know, there's a lot of it going on with the Lakers. And I do feel like, though, that is the team. You know,
the Lakers are the team.
4-6, 4-7. That's the team that you got to go after because there's desperation there. You know, LeBron only has a few more years, and they owe it to him to do whatever it takes to get bring in a high quality player. And you know, if whatever you think about the Bulls mid three, those are good additions. Like they will help. They're not going to make them a champion likely, but they will definitely help.
Yeah, the other team I would say is the 76ers.
Make the case.
Well, you know, like I think Maxey has played really, really well, right? They 50 people points thought like,
yesterday.
People thought maybe this team was going to fall apart, but with James, the ghost of James Harden gone, and like all the crap he brought, they're actually playing much better. And Embiid still wants to win now. They traded, you know, Harden away to get assets they thought they could get another star guard for, and so I think they would gear up for like a playoff run and be like, yeah, we are right here. Now's our time. Like, let's go. And so, you know, like maybe you just do Zach LaVine for Tobias Harris, like straight up. And they, I think same thing for them. Like they would want a shooter. And, you know, Zach could play that great role for them. We're like, yeah, I've got a clear number one and Maxey's maybe even the number two. And now LaVine, we just want you mainly to shoot, take advantage when you have like good matchups, but like mainly your role is to be Klay Thompson on this team. And I think Zach in that role might be fantastic. Hold on a
Are you telling me we're not getting any draft assets for?
Oh yeah, yeah, we'll get draft assets. Yeah, we'll get draft assets too. I don't know what picks this. Yeah. I don't know what picks the 76ers have off the top of my head, but basically, all the draft assets you just got from the Clippers, you'll send our way. And so we'll basically get whatever that package is, and but the main thing would just be Tobias Harris is like a just throw it out kind of deal. You could maybe match salary too. So if say they just want Harris because they value him, you could maybe do Marcus Morris Sr. makes like $17 million, and then you could try and like Nicholas Batum is at like $11 million. You bring him in there, and then maybe you got to throw in Robert Covington, and then that gets you close too. So it could be those three guys, which are. I don't know if that's the three guys they got from the Clippers. It probably is.
Just knowing how the Sixers do business, I think they probably value Tobias Harris. I think he's a good player.
Yeah, I mean, they might value. I mean,
he's kind of underrated on that team in terms because he's kind of embraced a defensive role to some extent. So I kind of feel like, oh man, I mean, like he's on an expiring contract. He's not committed past this year. You know, like it. I do feel like I could just see the Sixers potentially saying it, you know, making the argument, just knowing how Morey does everything. Like, you should be throwing in draft assets. Like, I think they'd play high. To me, it just seems like the Lakers would be a better. We'd be able to get more out of that organization than the Sixers. Do you feel the same?
I don't know. I mean, the Lakers could also end up at a point where they're just like, yeah, it's just not going to happen.
What I mean, about the
Knicks? Either way, I'm not trying to tell you that the 76ers are better than the Lakers or the other way around, and you shouldn't be telling me the reverse. It doesn't matter. If you decide to move one of these guys, you go out and you canvas everyone, you figure out who's actually the most desperate. Like us opining about who's more desperate is completely irrelevant. You look at, you know, these are just teams that would maybe consider it. I think those are two teams. That's why I just threw it out. I'm not saying the 76ers are a better option. I'm just saying if you do it, you explore all options, right? Like you're not going to be like, no, it has to be the Lakers. You're going to, you know, who knows who wants more. Yeah. Like, and you'll get the most if you can find multiple bidders, you know, that's how you'll get the most value.
Right. And well, things take a dark turn, which is definitely possible with the schedule. I mean, right now we beat the Pistons yesterday. It wasn't easy. It definitely wasn't easy for a team in the Pistons that had lost 7 in a row. We started out absolutely horrible. You know, that said, DeMar came to play, Io came to play, we finished with a W, we're 4-6, we're still in this, but we got two games now, we got the Bucks today in Milwaukee, we have the Magic in back-to-back at home, which you have to win both those games, then you have the Heat in the back-to-back at home, and then you're at the Thunder, at the Raptors, at the Nets, at the Celtics, at the Bucks, like, it's possible. That's not like an easy schedule with the way the Magic have been so far this season. You know, it's possible if we don't finish 5-5 in these games and we finish, let's say, 3-7, you know, I understand we're going to have to wait till December or January to make a trade or probably optimize our chances for value in a trade. You got to go in that direction because the season will be over, essentially, to me. Like, we're not going anywhere anyhow. I mean, what these next couple of games really are going to pretty much decide, in my opinion, where the direction of this franchise should be for the next few years. Because I think it's possible to trade all three of these guys.
So I would trade all three of these guys no matter what, which you know, because I've been saying it for 2 years.
Exactly.
Like, look, my opinion is like this, like, you might be in playoff contention at the trade deadline. You might even be in contention for like a spot out of the play-in. Like, if you do well, like, it's not out of the question. They could be fighting for 6 or 5. Like, people have been bummed out about the start, whatever, but they're 4-6. They're not like 1-9. Like, you can bounce back from this, which is right. What I've said, like, in all of our shows, right? Like, there's no reason to like panic about what you can do this season. The question is like, who cares? Like, who cares if we are the 6th seed? And then now in the offseason, we got to debate how we're going to run it back to, you know, we're going to extend DeMar through like years 35 through 37 to try and repeat this, like, you know, fringe low end playoff team. Like, so what are you doing? And so, you know, really just comes down to if you want to chase the playoffs this year, and I think they will, they're just not going to make any trade. But if they do want to like start thinking like how we could rebuild, you probably trade all the guys. And then maybe it's like, hey, DeMar, maybe it's DeMar to the Lakers and Zach to the 76ers, or the other way around. Like, those are two teams. Dallas might be another team that could be looking for another player. Like, they're off to a good start and could maybe be looking for someone. You know, Miami, I think I'd be scared if our general manager tried to trade with Miami, because I feel like we'd just lose no matter what. Just don't trust us to outsmart Pat Riley. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. You know, Houston's another team. They're 6-3. You know, they're kind of in a spot where like they want to win now, and you know, they brought in Fred VanVleet to do it. I don't know, without looking at their roster, but they're another team that might be like, yeah, we'd look to add, and like someone like Zach LaVine might be a great guy for them, where he's still young enough they could do whatever. OKC is another team, like, you know, at some point, they got a gazillion draft assets. Like, it makes sense for them to go all in on a player. And maybe it doesn't have to be like super all in, right? Like, they have probably got like 15 extra first round picks. They could give us like 2 protected ones, like, say, that will not land in the lottery. They're like guaranteed non-lotto picks. They could probably toss us 2 of those for DeMar DeRozan to try to juice their chances this year. You know, and it's like probably cost them basically nothing. Like, there's not like super high upside to them. You know, so, you know, there'll be options out there at the end of the year, I think, or at the trade deadline, I think, to move up or move out if we want to. But probably if we're fighting even for like the 7 or 8 spot, you know, if we're not clearly out of the play-in tournament at the deadline, I think we're just going to go for it and try to win. Like, I don't think our ownership and management have any thought of like, wow, maybe this team doesn't have a strong future, so we should take a step back and get assets while we can. Like, I just don't think that's in our DNA.
You know, for me personally, I will state I'd rather be battling for the 4, 5, and 6 over the next 3 years and endure a rebuild with these two guys. I have zero faith that they're going to find the correct talent in terms of draft assets for us to move forward. Patrick Williams was, by any stretch of the imagination so far right now, a big miss. Let's be honest about it, based on what he's produced so far. Marko Simonovic, Dalen Terry, another massive miss, the guy who I don't even think should be in the league. And then, you know, he hit on Io, but I'm sorry, I'm not going to give you a lot of credit for it, since I was sitting on my couch screaming draft Io for about 30 minutes leading up into that pick, right, in the second round. So, like, I'd rather go 4, 5, and 6 and in terms of battling for that seed and going in this direction and at least being competitive than just bottoming out in taking draft assets to watch these guys make picks. Not on board with that. If it was Garn Pax, I'd be all on board with your suggestions, Doug.
Can I throw you a slightly different scenario here? Because I think you're using the law of false alternatives. One, okay, you're probably not battling for the 4, 5, and 6 seeds, right? Like, we just missed the playoffs last year. Like, we're not battling for those seeds now. So like the idea that we're going to be doing that, we'll see where we are at the deadline. But like all of the, like the engines that predict wins predicted the Bulls around like 37 wins, 37, 38 wins. Like they're not predicted by any of the analytical stuff to be a team battling for those seeds. And what we've seen so far against, let's be honest, a pretty weak schedule, we've not looked very good. And so if we get up there and we're on pace to win 45, 46 games, you know, I could kind of agree with you, but then you also run into the problem that like at the age of 35, 36, and 37, DeMar DeRozan is probably not going to give you the same thing over the next 3 years that he just gave you over the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so you're probably not going to be battling for those seeds, even if somehow we end up doing that this year, which doesn't look likely right now. Like the odds of running this team back and doing it again the next 3 years are very low. So it's just diminishing returns. And then the second thing is, I didn't say you have to bottom out. Just make this thing, drill it down to the studs and be a tanking team and try and win 20 games. I said, trade these guys for a lot of draft assets. But like, you know, like the trades we came up with, they're bringing back solid players. Like, I think you might find if you brought back, say, in the Zach trade I made, which I think was like Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura, you might find like bringing in role players and whatever, you might find you do better than you are now, or you just do the same. Because now like these guys we just talked about, how we just want to see them play more minutes, like they'll play more minutes and they've been like really good. So like, I don't think it has to be, oh, we're just going to bottom out. But like, if you could get younger and you could get like solid players, you still might be in the same sort of like, say 37 to 42 win boat that you're in now, just with younger talent and then future draft picks. And they won't be great draft picks. I'm not suggesting we're going to trade these guys and get five lotto picks. But, you know, whatever. You get like five extra picks in like the mid first, you know, in the 15 to 25 range. Like, okay. You know, like probably one or two of those guys hit into like a pretty good player. You know, like the odds are low, but it's just the shotgun approach. If you have enough of them, you'll probably do okay. So I think you could then sustain what you want, Fred, which is like to be competitive. You don't want to be really terrible, but then reset and be younger. And then, you know, you're still kind of stuck. Like you don't have any chance to get a star, or I shouldn't say any chance. You have very low chance to get a star that way. But, you know, at least now you're younger and competitive and you're flexible. And if you actually hit on a guy, like you find the next Jimmy Butler a little bit later in the draft who becomes a star, or the next Giannis or whatever, some guy in this like plus 15 draft range, then yeah, now you have a chance to then like build something around that guy. And you at least have some hope. You know, you don't have all these like really big contracts, your cap flexibility starts opening up again, you know, you've got extra trade assets to do something else, you can start reshaping the team. So it's really just about increasing your asset base. And that doesn't have to be just becoming the worst possible. Like there's, and I don't think that's what I would necessarily want to do. I might be okay with it depending on the circumstances, but there's other options in between these things, is I guess all I want to say.
All good points. I do want to touch on some of the ones that you made and offer my counter. First of all, I do agree with you that what we are, I think we're starting to see, it's a little bit of a decline from DeMar, a little bit of a decline from Vooch. That's expected at the age that they're at. Zach LaVine, to me, is underperformed. I don't expect him to decline. I think he's in his prime, right in the middle of his prime, and I think he's going to play better as long as he stays healthy. And there's a big gamble in that. But he's not going to continue to shoot like this. He's proven it throughout his career, and I expect him to play significantly better. I don't expect a decline from Zach, I guess. So again, this is big picture to argue for 4, 5, 6. The second part of the argument is that you say we're not in contention for 4, 5, 6. The 76ers, the Celtics, and the Bucks are the three teams I would say unequivocally are better than the Bulls. After that in the East, I don't agree with you. I don't feel like that. Cleveland's probably better at 4, but you look at every other team that, and I'll run through it, the Knicks, the Nets, the Raptors have the same record as the Bulls, or actually one less loss. The Pacers, the Heat, the Hawks, the Magic. Those are all the teams in contention for 4, 5, and 6. I don't believe the Bulls are worse than those teams. I think they're all pretty much the same. Very little is different between those teams. And the decline of Vooch and DeRozan can be countered by vastly improved play from Kobe White and Io. And I think you're seeing that from Io. I think you're seeing it to a certain degree from Kobe. our young players that we have can improve and get better that will help us allow to compete for 4, 5, 6. So that's all I'm saying. Like, hey, if we keep on going down this road, but we're going to be 3-7 in the next 10, and we get just like waxed and blown off the floor, and Patrick Williams continues to be, you know, play at a literally non-NBA level where he's at right now, I don't expect that to be the case. But I'm saying if that happens, well, then, yeah, I'd be more inclined to follow your path and your different options. And you're right. You're absolutely right. It doesn't have to be just go, you know, just acquire draft assets and go to the bottom. But, you know, my basic point still stands is that I don't trust these guys in drafting talent. I haven't seen it. You know, like, I don't even want to take any draft picks. And, you know, big picture in retrospect, just getting these high picks doesn't guarantee anything anyhow. Like, I was just talking about this the other day with a friend. You mean, you know, all the hours we wasted on, we got to get Zion or Ja? What have those guys done for their teams? What a disaster would have been if we got if we actually won Zion and we've had to endure what we've seen over the past few years with that guy, like all the promise. It'd be like Derrick Rose revisited, except worse. At least Derrick got us to an ECF. You know, like, well, Ja Morant, like, I like Ja, and I think he'll probably have a bright future still, but hasn't exactly been a great, you know, ride. Well, it's been a pretty good ride. Take that back. I mean, obviously made some mistakes off the court, which have led to this mess. But, you know, like, it doesn't guarantee you anything. Like, all the time we lost on those picks, and what if those guys won? You know, I don't know. I'm a little bit just knowing the situation that we're in. We're stuck with these two guys. I'd rather go in a direction of trading draft assets for talent than having them take the pick. What say you?
I think you...
Assuming they're still here, Doug. Go with that.
Okay, let's assume they're still here. You know what they've also never shown they can do? Trade assets for good value. Like, look, if your guys are lousy, like, if you start with the assumption they're going to make bad decisions, then it really doesn't matter what they do. They're going to do it poorly. You know, the draft is a crapshoot. I don't like the Pat Williams pick, and certainly in retrospect, but I'll say what I said at the time. Like, when we took Pat Williams, the next 8 guys had like similar evaluations, and most of them have been really bad. So, like, whatever. And then you're ripping on like Marko Simonovic. Who cares? The place they picked him, they didn't have a roster spot, so they had to take a draft and stash guy. And well, they picked him at a place.
Dele Terry was a bust.
They picked him at a place where like all the guys are busts. So Simonovic is not even a factor. And then yeah, Dalen Terry was super dumb. But either way, all I'm saying is I don't think there's like enough evidence that I'm gonna be like, oh, they can't draft. Like, the draft is such a crapshoot anyway. The Dalen Terry one like boggles my mind. Like, that one boggles my mind. I feel like there's no defense for it. And I even said that, like, when they made the pick. I can't imagine why you would take this guy. I see no reason why you would do it. But you never know. The draft is a crapshoot, so maybe they see something that I don't see. And, you know, like, I still say maybe, hey, that was possible. But now that, like, some time has passed, I'm like, nope, my evaluation was correct. There's no reason they should have taken that guy. And everyone around him was really good, too. So it was like, you know, wasn't
yes,
like
the that's
Pat
the counter
Williams scenario where it's like, oh, well, all the guys were bad and you took the only, you know. Yeah, so that's fine. But regardless of that, I would be like just apocalyptic if they start trading more future assets to build around this crappy team. And they just like try to keep running it back with DeMar, Vooch, and Zach as their big three. I cannot imagine a worse decision you could make running this team than saying, you know what, we need these three guys back. You have got to shake up that group. That group does not play well together. They suck balls together. They are awful together. You have to break up that group. I don't care if you want to try to win now or if you want to try to build for the future or whatever. You have to break up that group. It is negligence that you are not breaking up that group at this point.
Good points. You made some very good points. I will not debate. I mean, you brought that up with you bring up a good point with Marko Simonovic. Like, hey, yeah, he's second round pick. I agree. Those are all kind of crapshoots. But
he was a late second too.
Where I get concerned, you and I was sitting right next to you on your couch screaming for Malachi Branham. I wasn't screaming. I was saying I want him to get Branham. And Walker Kessler was also a player we had all talked about. That was a good player that we felt would help with our rim defense. So it wasn't like we were, when guys sitting on the couch are making, you know, these decisions correctly. And, you know, I was shouting for Iowa the year before that. So, again, I don't give him credit for that since I'm sitting on the couch. You're right. Yeah. It is a kind of a crapshoot, but they have access to a lot more than we have. And when we're sitting on the couch.
Jalen Terry is the only one that is terrible. There's no excuse for that one.
Patrick Williams is terrible.
I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's terrible. Like, I wouldn't have made the same pick, but, like, I don't know. Like, I don't think we would be meaningfully better off with Isaac Okoro or Denny Advia or Killian Hayes or whoever, like, the next five guys. Oh, Onyeka Okonwu. I don't know. I can't remember who else was in that mix of, like, people who all suck now.
Well, Maxey was in that draft.
Well, Maxey was, like, 18 or something, like, 16. Like I said, if you start looking at a guy and you're like, all right, well, here are the guys that we should take. Like,
well, Tyrese Halliburton was in that draft, Doug.
Again, I mean, he was 12.
Yeah, but that's because there were reasons why he fell that far. I really felt like Tyrese Halliburton. Listen,
all I'm saying, Fred,
we did a pre-draft show, Doug. We talked about Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah, that's fine. Like,
He was absolutely disgusted at number four. The negatives against him, he went to Iowa State, so every dope out there was talking about Garpacks and Iowa State, can't draft him. And the other negative was, you know, people were questioning his jump shot, like the form, right?
Yeah, he has a wacky form.
But outside of that, the guy was a freaking fantastic player. I went back and listened to what we had both said about it. I mean, me specifically, I was very high on Tyrese Halliburton. Like, I thought he was going to be a very good player. So,
all right, he wasn't your pick at four.
He wasn't my pick at four. I wanted Coro. No denying that. But I would have been happy, as I said on a show, with Halliburton.
Yeah. Either way, my only point is it's a shit way to analyze the draft. It just is. If your guy is bad, but then the next five guys are also bad, and you say, like, well, we should have taken a guy who is, like, way away from this, it's just a poor way to analyze it. So, like, I'm just going to say, I'm not saying Pat was a good pick. He wasn't. Like, and he might even be the worst of all the bad players outside of maybe Killian Hayes. But but either way, it's like in that situation, I'm not going to throw a lot of heat at Acme. And you know I will throw heat at Acme all the time about things that are dumb. But there's things that I'm like, you know, it's like when I think about it, like, hey, a rock could have done better than you. Like, that's a situation I'm going to throw heat. Like, you actively made this worse. Like, that's a situation I'm going to throw heat. Like, I view the Pat draft as just a crapshoot. The Dalen Terry pick, though, does make you question it. Like, you took twice. This is the one thing, and I think we said this last show. Twice, you took a guy in the draft who, like, didn't score 10 points in college. Like, I just feel like, and I'm not saying scoring is a great thing that you have to correlate, but, like, if you can't score 10 points a game in college, you're probably not ready to be in the NBA.
No debate on this. No debate on this. You're the third best player on a team that didn't win anything in college basketball. So
unless you have some freak athletic, like you're 7 feet tall and you whatever, like there's certain guys you could be like, okay, this guy's different because of some reason. But neither Pat nor Terry were in that category, you know. So
no, they weren't freak athletes. They didn't have like a Wiseman height or you know like. But I kind of made a tweet about this. Or an X about this, that I agree. You should never, ever, one of my lessons now I'm going to run with going forward, never, ever, ever, ever draft a player with a low motor in the top 10. You want to take it, regardless of how much talent he has. Like, he has a low motor. It's evidently clear in every game I watch him play. Kobe White, high motor. Io, high motor. These are guys, Caruso, high motor. Even, you know, guys that play hard. You could see it. It's not that hard. Craig plays hard. Those kind of players, you always take a chance on. But you don't take it on somebody that plays like this. He doesn't play hard. And that's what I've been saying for years. So, all the time. You know, unrelentingly. Yeah. So, anyhow.
Like I said, I don't think it's a matter of playing hard. I just, and this is the thing, I think we talked about this once before. I think people, like, just view motor as pure effort. And I think part of it is, like, he can't process what he should do fast enough. And by the time he figures out what he should do, it's too late. And then the result of that is it looks like he's just like not trying. But I think it's just like he just doesn't know what he should be doing quick enough. Like, should I cut to make an offensive rebound? Maybe yes, maybe no, too late. Like, you had an opening, but you just didn't take it. And like some guys have I think, a very intuitive feel for the game. And they just, like, their natural instinct is just to go nuts and just do whatever. And so, like, I look at Dalen Terry and I'm like, he also probably doesn't know what he should do fast enough. So he's a guy with like high motor, but like no idea of what he should be doing. So he's going really hard, but then doing equally super dumb things all the time. And so Pat Williams, like, on the same spectrum of like, I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm going to start with trying not to make a mistake. And like Dalen Terry is like, I'm going to start by just going really hard and I'm going to make a gazillion really bad mistakes. And I think you can grow from either of those places, but the guys, and like Io is a good example, like a guy who has good motor and makes good things happen, you know, like he has a high intuition. And so like a guy who, yeah, anyway, I just don't think it's all about effort. I think there's like a piece of it. It's like, he just doesn't know what he should do. And by the time he figures it out, it's long past. The opportunity is gone.
Nah, I mean, on this point, I'm just going to counter and say, I got to disagree with you. I've seen far too many. He's standing at the 3-point line when a shot goes up, jogging slowly back. There's a reason why Io, when you think of the great plays he's made in the last 2 years, several have been game-winning offensive rebounds. It's because he's constantly attacking, constantly moving, constantly providing maximum effort.
Yeah.
That's not what Patrick Williams does.
I agree. It
has nothing to do with what he's thinking.
I think it is. I think like he's just doesn't, like, I think he overthinks everything. But whatever, it doesn't matter. The result is the same. And it doesn't even matter if, you know, the result is the same.
You're right.
I'm just saying, it's like, I don't think he can change. Like, so maybe I'll put it this way. I mean, I'm going to rephrase it slightly worse. My view on it is worse than yours. If it was really like you just had to try harder, I feel like you could just make him try harder by doing stuff. If it's like he can't process what he should do, there is no solution to it. Right? Like, you can't make him process faster. Like, he just can't. You know, you can make someone, there's lots of ways you can make someone give you more effort. So, you know, that's the only thing I say. It's like, I actually think my view of it is more depressing than yours. I'm not trying to give him an excuse.
well said on your prediction. Another incredible job as we bring the bus in. Doug, I'm going to have to give you an honorary prophet robe and just say, just incredible job with your call on that. I think it was our friend Chris at LA Hoops, KLA Hoops, who had posted two different points on Patrick Williams, and yours was the correct one. Unbelievable.
And mine was the bigger hot take too, you know?
No, absolutely.
But, I mean, I'd say like especially. Mine was the riskier of those statements to make. I like it. I don't care if I'm right about something that's like a 50-50. But I really do take a little bit of pride and pleasure when you say something that like 90% of people disagree with, and then you're right. Yeah, I think that one I feel proud about. So
you should. And as we bring it in, I got to say, keep on enjoying us on X. I think I appreciate the legions of fans who have provided me with artwork at my request, using the talents of painters everywhere and artificial intelligence to create some just really iconic images. I don't know if you've seen what I've done with our mutual friend Mark Kay in Australia. Some of the work we put together with my fans and I has just been stellar. Did you see the kangaroo?
I did.
The kangaroo with the false prophet?
The AI image generation and you and Mark is a never-ending source of joy for me. Like, it really is. I gotta jump on the bandwagon. Like, it's so much better than the GIFs. I can't stand all the stupid-ass GIFs you guys post. But the AI generation just absolutely cracks me up. I lose it. So I guess each person has a type, and my type is dumb AI images.
I got to admit, I laugh for probably a good 10 minutes. Mark hasn't shared it yet publicly, but he has one of, apparently it's me being analyzed by University of Northeast Idaho scientists. The one he shared with us yesterday on a DM. That was pretty good. So freaking hilarious. I just laughed. I mean, but you know, the good news is too, I have a few I haven't shared yet. So,
all right, I'm waiting for those. It's good stuff.
What did you think about one of the guy of the prophet inside the car? I thought that was brilliant, dismantling the pistons. Did you get that?
I like the working on the engine one. The one where you actually were driving the car. Like, oh, yeah, if you look at that closely, the steering wheel is like on the outside of the car. Like, he's sitting on the windshield driving with the steering wheel outside the car. Like,
I missed that. I didn't miss that. I just said send a picture of a prophet driving an automobile, as in we've, you know, kind of basically, you know, harnessed the Pistons and gained control of the game. Was the idea I was trying to
go take a look at it. Like, the AI does some like wild stuff, but it's like basically they don't have the windshield existing, and they just kind of like merged a non-convertible with a convertible, and he's like sort of like sitting through the windshield, and the car's like on the it's just weird. Like, you don't notice it at first, right? Like, you and then you look more and more closely at it, and you're like, wait, what? And AI is kind of like that, like the same one where he's working on the engine. It's like all these like sort of things that kind of look like tools, but then when you look at them, it like makes no sense. So
it's brilliant.
It's pretty, it's pretty hilarious. But like for like the time it takes to make it, it's like awesome. I love it. So I'm a big fan of this shift away from the GIFs into the AI images.
Thank you, DT. And on that note, we bring in the bus for another great trip. Let's beat the Bucks tonight and have something great to talk about next Monday. Until next time, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.
All right, brother.